at the end of the day be able to converse with the LLM in the right way, in the right manner, and at the right time, you could say, so that you get that value, you can extract that value.
Hello, and welcome back to Stay Cognizant, where we bring you the ideas, people, and insights you need to stay cognizant of what's new and what's next in tech. Today, I'm joined by my colleague Shankar Udyavar. He's a vice president and global head of technology consulting at Cognizant. In his role, he helps C-suite leaders modernize technology, monetize data, and apply AI to redesign processes for faster business impact, and a whole lot of other things too. Shankar, welcome. I'm really glad to have you.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you for having me on this platform.
So, Shankar, today we're unpacking a topic that you know a lot about. It's context engineering. And really, we're going to talk today about what it is, why it's emerging as a critical differentiator from an enterprise AI strategy perspective, how it builds on prompt engineering, you know, kind of the most common form of, you know, interacting with AI models that people know today, and why this shift really matters so much for Cognizant and for our clients and the enterprises that they're a part of. You know, while the media and academia are buzzing about context, the reality is that most enterprises aren't quite there yet. They're not fully, you know, involved in these conversations. And so that's exactly why we're diving in, because, you know, I think we are believe more and more that companies who master context engineering will be the ones that ultimately extract real business value from AI. And so I want to start with the big picture. You know, context engineering is quickly emerging as the real differentiator. Let's talk about what exactly it is and how it expands the scope of what AI can do. So that's really my first question for you, Shankar. How would you define context engineering in the enterprise setting, and why it's emerging as a strategic priority for us and for our clients?
And I'm glad you used that one word in the enterprise, right? I think that's the real real word to focus on. And when I look at it in terms of AI, we are saying at least in two ways. One is B2B versus B2C scenarios. And we've been very familiar as individual users of AI in the B2C scenario, or we've been familiar with the B2C scenario, where we interact with, let's say, a ChatGPT, or we interact with Claude or Perplexity, and we interact with the LLM and we try to elicit some knowledge out of it, and get insights, or get maybe even recommendations, right? And the way we interact and what we feed to the LLM is what the LLM uses to respond. And we are very well versed in that, in doing that now, right? So, and we know exactly, to some extent, what we expect as well, because once it starts saying or doing something which we stop, you know, we don't really recognize, we say it's hallucinating. So if you look at that interaction, and we expect now the enterprise to do it, it's not an easy thing, because there is no such thing as one individual from an enterprise interacting with an LLM. So as the scope of AI expands, and Ravi has laid this out so well in terms of this vector one, vector two, vector three, whether you're doing IT, hyper productivity, or you are modernizing your business processes, or you're looking at new value chain extension and ecosystem partners, and put AI at the core, an enterprise has to interact with the LLM. So it needs all kinds of context, right? So it needs how your processes are set up, your role structures, metrics, what governs your individuals, what are the policies, and how do you set up work, how do you have workflows. But more importantly, if you think about what finally gets in a B2C scenario is, hey, you decide that this worked for you or not. And that's when you look at enterprises, humans take decisions and some of them go wrong. But as an enterprise, you've been able to harvest some of those things as to what decisions you took, what went wrong, what worked well, and why. If you're able to use all of that and feed it to the LLM, then the enterprise is talking to the LLM and not really an individual.
Right. So you're taking that, it's the difference between that singular mind, you know, which is me in a B2C setting, and sort of this huge organizational knowledge base. How does that happen functionally? How does that get activated in context engineering?
Yeah, so as you look forward to designing what we call as agentic AI systems, and now we are saying they are all multi-agents, or if you look at multiple agents, you know, multiple thousands of agents working together, and that too across not just within an organizational boundary, but it could span organizational boundaries with your partners and clients. When you start looking at that, you have to start harvesting all the context that I talked about, which means you have to be able to tap into different systems. You have to be able to tap into what users do with their systems, like interactions, information. You have to be able to tap into what I call, and many people call this, digital exhaust of your applications. You know, so what's really within an application, the digital exhaust of the applications and the infrastructure, maybe the processes and how humans interact with applications, as well as agents come along, how humans interact with agents as well. And all of that has to be extracted from the respective technology landscape. So it might be application stack, like modernized ones, or maybe legacy data warehouses, maybe data marts. You're looking at applications which run on workflows, maybe do have APIs, maybe some may not have APIs. So all of that is exposed through very specific engineering framework. So we, of course, could use an agent framework to make an API call, or extract data from what's known as RAG, or retrieval augmented generation. So we can get all of this information, and it is tailored in a way that the LLM can best respond to that use case. And it's not the entire use case in one interaction. It is broken down based on multiple agents. So you need to be able to manage not just for that one interaction, but also the potential subsequent, or based on what happened prior to that interaction. So memory and storage of context, recycling of context, all of those engineering norms come into play when you look at that part.
So you mentioned LLMs quite a bit in that response, obviously. And one of the things that you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago is how context is catalyzing this shift where value is being transferred from LLMs to the enterprises themselves. And I thought that was a really fascinating, you know, revelation. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
So the way I look at it is, any industry value chain, or in many cases, cross industry value chains, you know, there are people who are industries within a value chain who create value, and then there are some who extract, but there is a value interchange that happens from one company to another company, or from one enterprise to another, or from sometimes one industry to another, right? So value is created, and then in certain parts it is extracted. So everybody gets a share of it. So if I look at now the LLMs and the infrastructure behind it, that is really booming. But you know, that value that has been created has not been completely extracted by all the players in that value chain, all right? At the tail end, or you know, you could say at the front end, it depends how you define the value chain. There are enterprises, right? And there are companies, our clients, the Fortune 100, 1,000, and anybody out there who runs a company. Today, they are trying to extract a piece of that value that has been created in the large infrastructure, the GPU companies, and the agent foundry or agent framework companies and so on, or LLMs, people who are building these LLMs. So there is a lot of value that has gotten accumulated there in that part of the value chain. And the only way to extract for an enterprise, the only way to extract some value out of that is to using agentic systems or agentic AI with, let's say, LLM at its core. But how do we do that? You have to, at the end of the day, be able to converse, I'm using the term converse, with the LLM in the right way, in the right manner, and at the right time, you could say, so that you get that value, you can extract that value. Without context engineering, you don't have that bridge to extract that value. So unless you are able to build that bridge to extract that value, you are still part of the ecosystem, but you see that the value is still accumulated in one end of the value chain, and the rest of the value chain is still waiting for that value to be transferred over. And that's where I see context playing a role as a catalyst for the value to be extracted by all the players in that value chain.
So we've talked about why context matters. Let's look at how it actually takes shape in practice, from partnerships with organizations like WorkFabric to the technical challenges of scaling context. Let's talk a little bit about how Cognizant is helping clients embed organizational knowledge into AI systems. So we recently announced a partnership with WorkFabric, plans to deploy 1,000 engineers to industrialize AI. And this is all part of a broader ecosystem play, where we'll bring in additional partners as well. And, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about the strategic vision we're trying to bring to life with this first partnership, maybe as a foundational piece, but certainly not, you know, the whole game.
So when you look at how to, or when we see some of our clients or some of our, even our partners who are building agents, right? At the end of the day, the way they construct an agent, a lot of it has to do with how they construct the context in which the agent interacts with the LLM. And some of that you can extract from an enterprise, a living and breathing enterprise. And there are ways to do it. There are ways to maybe even extract that through conversations with the end users, understand how processes work. You can do mining, data mining, or process mining, task mining. That's one way to extract the knowledge of a living and breathing enterprise, and then start capturing that into context to define how an agent should behave. But at the end of the day, there is only so much that you can help to define in terms of the behavioral construct of the agent. And then you need to start feeding in more context as the agents live in an organization. And keep in mind that the agents are never going to be on an island by themselves, right? They are going to always coexist with humans, yes, as a team member. And when that happens, you expect that agents and humans will work together in a predefined manner. And yes, very often they will, because when you design agents and when you deploy them, you would have thought through all the situations in which they will interact. And that becomes one part of getting that context from the huge part of it is, you know, how do humans interact with each other and then with agents? Let's get that as the dynamic context and make it available to our agents. That's where Context Fabric fits in. It is able to bring in all the interactions that humans have with their ecosystem and feed it to the agents that we build. So making the agents more accurate, more reliable. But at the same time, there are, you know, things will go beyond a certain boundary. Humans will interact among themselves in a slightly different way than what you may have studied in the past. Or they may have a slightly different behavior vis-a-vis the agents, or the other way around. You also want to capture this slightly more enhanced and hitherto maybe unknown patterns of context and route it back to our agents. And again, Context Fabric will help us do that, right? So I see numerous ways of building out, and it's not just for a custom built agents. Even for agents that might be on traditional platforms like a CRM system or the CMDP system, and so on, where we may have different kinds of agent doing IT use cases, business or sales or sales related CRM related use cases, and you still need context. So that's where I see this as part of the ecosystem. But there are other pieces of managing context, like memory is important, orchestration is important, ensuring security of the context is important. And there will be different sources of context. We may get it from IoT, right? It has to be brought together, synthesized, curated, and made sure it is safe. It has not been poisoned. And then, so we'll build more partners as part of the ecosystem that will support us and be complementary to our existing partners as well.
I think you started to get at my next question, Shankar, which is really about the biggest technical challenges, right? I mean, you talked about there's a lot of steps that context data needs to flow through, identifying it, curating it, synthesizing it, merging it. And you layer on things like governance and security, which are so important for all of our clients, and especially our clients in, you know, industries that deal with a lot of sensitive information. How is Cognizant helping with this? What's our approach sort of generally to helping clients work through this complicated process?
If I look at the entire scope of context engineering, I can look at it as a funnel, right? As a funnel. At the small end of the funnel, maybe you call it the tip of the funnel, you would see people talk about context window. And everybody's trying to, and every LLM has a certain size of the context window, and you have to engineer the information packets to fit into that so that, you know, you're optimizing the use, you're making sure you get the relevant answers with the relevant and right context within that window. And at the other end, which is the broad side of the context funnel, is everything that I talked about earlier, which is organizational DNA, how people work, how humans work with each other, and the processes, workflows, objectives, policies, governance, and so on. And somewhere between, from the front end of the funnel to the tail end of the funnel, you have to manage the life cycle. You have to be able to bring it all together and land it in a way that the LLM responds with the accuracy. And there will always be variability in that, right? So there are so many things that we do as engineering. The reason I think the word engineering suits this really well is engineering is all about reducing variability, right? You engineer a bridge, you engineer and build a building. So there is an architecture and then there is engineering. You want to reduce variability in this, right? So if you have worked with or work with Claude or Perplexity or something, the moment you change a little bit in the prompt, the response changes, correct? So as an organization who's dealing with LLMs, you want to keep that variability really, really low. So you're trying to structure and engineer everything that goes to the LLM as concrete and as consistent as possible every time you hit the LLM for a given use case, for a given transaction. But humans introduce variability. You can't control everything that the human does. So we have to bring in additional engineering constructs around how to evaluate what is coming in, how to filter, how to ensure that the humans are not having any malicious intent as they interact through our engineered context engineering channel. So that engineering funnel, that entire funnel has many steps, as you pointed out. But at the same time, there are new steps that will get added as the ecosystem expands. So as Cognizant, we'll have to help our clients through this entire adoption curve. So you'll have within the organization, then within maybe a line of business, then expanding it to other lines of businesses. And then beyond that, across clients and vendors, what happens is every time you expand, you are opening yourselves to different kinds of risks where context can get variable, right? You're exposing yourself to potential variability. And I think what we take to our clients will be, how do you reduce variability in your context? And how do you make sure that every time you interact with the LLM, it is well-structured, well-thought-through, controlled, governed, and secure. And then, you get this same response for every transaction and every interaction.
And you're leading into my next question, which goes back to something else you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is that, You know, I think you reflected that for many of our clients right now, they're struggling with hallucinations. They're struggling to get out of using synthetic data where it looks great there. But, you know, with the real thing, the results are more variable. And you said that, you know, context engineering is really going to be a method to get them over these boulders and sustain the higher level of adoption of agentic AI that, you know, we're hoping for. Can you both unpack that a little bit? But also, I'm curious, like, when you talk to our clients, are they on board with this? Do they see that vision, you know, coming true for them?
Yeah, so I think you have two parts to your question, right? Let me start with the second one. I think depending on where the clients are starting off, some have been far ahead in certain parts of their adoption curve. I spoke to one client who started their Gen AI journey 3 years ago, okay? And they are pioneers in what they did. But as they start embarking on agentic, what I realized through my conversations with them is they have a lot of unlearning to do as well. What that means, so think about this. This world is changing so fast that people who are pioneers in one part of the AI journey have to think about how to unlearn and do things in a different way for agentic. And that's going to happen on a consistent basis. So to answer your question, are they getting on board? I think some of them are who are starting now with us. And then when they hear things around, hey, context engineering, why is it? That is kind of the heart of agent development and heart of how you take agents to life. They are coming on board. But some who have been ahead or been doing some kind of prototypes and taken some immature products to production, they realize, yeah, there is some partial truth here that they did something, the hallucinations did not allow them to adopt things, and they start to come on board. So I think it's a mixed bag. But if you go back and think about the first part of your question, I think that is something we'll have to focus on, right? In getting more of our solutions out there in the market, helping clients through their journey in very specific use cases, bringing together their current systems to the next level. So not everything is agentic at the end of the day. Clients are investing in other technologies as well and other upliftment in their AI or non-AI part of their ecosystem. So all of that has to be brought on board. And then agentic AI has to succeed within that.
So as LLMs become more interchangeable and commoditized, context, you know, as we've talked about, will be the lever that sets enterprises apart. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, what not just what we can expect today, but where this frontier is heading in the next several years. So, you know, looking ahead, what do you think the future of context engineering looks like in the next 1 to 2 years? You know, who knows what could be coming on the heels of context engineering, but looking at it now and thinking about the tremendous opportunity and knowing, as you said, that we're kind of at the beginning of this, what do you think it looks like, you know, 2 years from now? How is Cognizant, you know, leveraging context?
I was trying to, a lot of people asked me these questions. I was at another event and then I was having some conversations. So I think the way companies differentiate among each other is through different dimensions, right? Sometimes it is a product that differentiates. It is often you hear culture as a differentiation, you hear processes. Sometimes you have assets which are different. I mean, you may be in a certain location and nobody can get that location anymore. But when you look at broader, when you study, it's how humans work. It's how people work, right? And if we've seen so many case studies, there was, I don't want to name companies and so on, but there was an airline company which could turn around within 20 minutes. So they are at the gate and out of the gate in 20 minutes. And when people studied it, it was only based on how they were able to get the crew to work together to actually get the plane out within 20 minutes. And it's the same plane. Everybody had the same plane. Everybody has the same gate. Everybody has the same airport. But this airline could do it. So what that means is there are different ways humans will interact with each other. And you want to replicate that in your agents. And if you look at a plane or an infrastructure, they are largely commoditized. So as LLM, you can switch out LLMs today. You can switch, and I hear clients asking us, why should I stay with this? It's expensive. I'll move to this one. And they're already doing it. So what's going to differentiate them from one another, the companies from one another, is how do they use the LLM or get the right knowledge? And that depends on what you feed to the LLM. So if you're able to replicate your differentiating characteristics, your behavior as an organization, how you curtail, how you respond. And I hear this all the time, right? It's not about how you do things on in a normal course of a day, right? Things always go wrong, whether it's internal or with clients, but how you respond and how you, work through your constraints and still stay compliant and still stay legal. And if you can replicate agents to do that, then you're encoding your organizational differentiating behavior into the agents, right? So at that point, that is what you're feeding to the LLM. And at the receiving end, it's just the size of the window, the token size, and how it stores or responds is what matters. Every public LLM is going to be trained on publicly available information. So when you switch an LLM, your context still continues to carry the differentiating characteristics.
So I've been thinking throughout this conversation about the tremendous amount of energy that this is going to require. And one thing I was starting to think about when you were just talking about context and culture was, I don't know, a world where maybe my company's context isn't that great. Maybe I want to lease Netflix's or Amazon's or somebody that's been more successful. And so it kind of leads me to this, my last question here, which what do you think are the biggest technical and ethical considerations and challenges that are going to arise in the next 3 to 5 years as AI systems become more complex and more data hungry? And as there is this notion of, context becoming more broadly understood. And, what do you think is going to happen there?
Well, that's a very loaded question. I can't foresee the future that much. But I think if we break this down into, does context engineering on its own have legs for a longer period? Let's put it that way, right? And I think it does, because there is no other way, there is no other language, so to speak, or there is no other engineering around that funnel to interact with the LLM. Now, maybe eventually we'll have different kinds of models. It may not be LLMs anymore. Maybe then something else will come in. And it will still be on the back of something which is similar to context engineering. We are not going to go back to now a different way of behaving and working and expecting something different from AI, right? I mean, we've been in the AI age since the 60s, and this is where we are finally seeing it really explode and become truly material.
Plus, we're going to have these agents integrated into our workforce, so we're not going to...
Yes, exactly. You won't be able to, you won't be able to easily extricate them and go back to the previous normal, so I want to use that. Now, But what happens in the future? You're always going to deal with the traditional problems around security, how to safeguard, prevent. And there are so many new terminologies, and these are true, right? Context poisoning is a true thing, right? And people, there's a more variability. I'll go back, more variability in how you bring in context into your ecosystem, you're going to introduce that risk. Now, within a black box, in an enterprise, if there are truly headless agents, okay, and you define it that way, there are certain processes which do not interact with humans at all, and there is only a human in the loop for exception for some kind, then you're curtailing the variability, because then the agents have pre-structured ways of behaving, some context that is serving as guardrails and constraints. We can do that. And then if you have humans in the loop for exception, you can control. But otherwise, the more variability for B2C companies who are exposed to the broader consumer world, they have more at risk. For B2B who work largely within and then have very specific touch points with customers, maybe they will have less risk of these kind of situations where somebody's trying to hack into your context, so to speak. But I can't foresee us going back on certain the progress that we have made in towards using LLMs and, you know, using a different way of writing our programs, a different way of creating functional logic that supports our need for applications, for processing, for storage, and so on. So I think that we are not going to be able to pull that back anymore. We only have to live with the constraints that we see today, build on them, and, you know, go to the next new normal.
The future of enterprise AI isn't about better prompts. It's about a smarter foundation. And as we've discussed today, context engineering is what transforms a one-off query into a sustainable solution. That's how Cognizant is enabling clients to embed their unique knowledge and truly future-proof their operations. Shankar, thanks again for being here today. Context engineering is something that everybody is talking about. People want to know more about it. And I really appreciate the way you helped break it down. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Pamela, for having me on this platform. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back soon with more on how Cognizant is helping organizations turn emerging technologies into meaningful progress. We'll see you next time on Stay Cognizant.